let's explain jitter again, or recap on what we know about jitter and move on about multimedia protocols. What we know, let's just get this set. What we went through last week was looking at the different performance requirements of multimedia applications. And we know already that with voice audio applications, we normally care about getting data rates of tens of to hundreds of kilobits per second. Video needs faster. That is, with video, we have more information to transfer. So we need hundreds of kilobits per second up to possibly tens of megabits per second if we want to have very good quality video, high-definition TV, for example. In terms of errors, our multimedia applications can tolerate some packet errors. That is, they'll still work in an acceptable manner if we lose some packets. But, of course, too many errors and the quality seen at the receiver will start to drop. The quality seen or heard will start to reduce if we have too many errors. Delay with voice calls, we'd like it to keep the delay from one point to the other point to be about less than 150 milliseconds. In a conversational audio application, having too much of a delay means that the two endpoints start to wait for the other person to talk and then they start to interrupt each other. Streaming applications, where we're just sending audio or video in one direction, can tolerate a larger delay by using buffers. And also, we'll see, tolerate larger jitter using buffers. So we explained that jitter, which is the variance of the delay, can cause problems as well. We showed some demonstrations last week. Increasing the jitter causes problems or the low quality output at the receiver. We went through an example, and the point of this example is to show that with no jitter, with some network delay, so this is the sending computer, receiving computer, the delay to send packets across the network is 50. With no jitter, we receive packets at regular intervals, and we can play back the content. If it's video content, we can display the video on the screen. If it's audio, we can output it to the speakers. What we'd like to do, since the content is generated at regular intervals, we'd like to play it back at the same interval. If I'm generating 25 frames per second of video, that is one frame every 40 milliseconds, 25 frames per second, then it should be played back at 25 frames per second. Because if it's played back at 30 frames per second, it would look like it's in fast forward. If it's played back at 10 frames per second, it will be very slow motion. So we need to play back at the receiver at 25 frames per second. So therefore, the interval between each packet we receive, and each packet contains some content, like a frame, or a portion of a frame, or multiple video frames, we need to take the content from the packet we receive and play it back at the same interval at which it was generated. That's our goal. But of course, if there's network jitter, that causes problems, because the delay of the first packet may be greater than the delay of the second packet. And the delays of subsequent packets changes over time. It goes up and down. As a result, if we play back the content as soon as we receive the packet, we'll play back the first piece of content at time 50, the second piece 30 time units later, and then the next one, and we had a mistake here, this was not 180, it was I think one, this should be 80 plus 60, 140. The next one would have a delay from here to here of 60 time units. This one's just 30. That is, there's this difference in the times at which we play back the content. That's a problem. That's caused by jitter in the network. To compensate for that, to try to fix it, we can use buffers at the receiver. So we receive the packet, but we do not immediately play back the content in that packet. So again, if a packet contains one frame of video, we receive it at this time, but we do not display that frame on the screen until a little bit later. We buffer the content, that is, we save it in memory. The time that we buffer will depend upon what we expect the jitter to be. So in this example, this is when we receive packets at the computer. There's jitter in the network, so we're receiving them with different intervals. We don't immediately play back. This is when we play back the content in those packets. If the content was a frame, we'd display a frame on the screen at this time, and then at this time, and then here, and here. And we see that we now have the regular intervals. And therefore, the playback is the same as the, or the rate at which we play back the content is the same at which we generate the content. The intervals is constant all the way. And that removes the impact of jitter. We cannot remove jitter from the internet. It's caused by many different factors, like all the traffic going through the internet. So we cannot remove jitter, but at the receiver we can compensate for that by buffering the data and then delaying shortly before we start the playback. Here we receive the first packet at time 50. We delay an extra 20 time units and then we playback to get this smooth playback. So that's how we can deal with jitter in some multimedia applications. Of course, it's a trade-off now between we want to remove the jitter. How long do we buffer for? If we buffer for a long time, if I buffer instead for 20 but for 100 time units, I wouldn't start the playback until much later. So the time from when the first packet was sent until when I start the playback would be large. The time from when the person presses play until they start seeing on the screen will be large. And that's not nice in some cases. So a large buffer can compensate for jitter, but introduces extra delay. A small buffer, less delay, but we still may have impacts of effects of jitter. Because if our buffer is very small, we still may not have packets ready to play back when they need to be played back. So there's a trade-off there between jitter, using a buffer to remove the impact of jitter introduces some extra delay. So in summary, we said that playback buffers are the main mechanisms to deal with jitter, so buffers at the receivers. For this to work, we normally include timestamps on packets so that the receiver knows when that should be played back. That is, if the timestamp, this packet is 7.36 seconds from the start of the playback, and therefore the receiver knows to start to play that content at 7.36 seconds after the first piece of content was played. So timestamps and even sequence numbers, do we know that this frame comes before the previous, comes after the previous one, and so on. How long do we buffer for before we start the playback? Depending on the applications. Stored audio and video, that is, you're watching them. So the audio or video is stored on the server. You press play, and it's sending it to you and playing it as you receive it. Then several seconds is reasonable. That's like YouTube, for example. You press play, the video is stored on the server, it's streamed to you, and after several seconds it starts to play back. If we have live, we want to minimize the delay, because in live it means that we'd like to experience what's happening as it happens at the source. So we'd like to keep the delay short. Interactive, even smaller, because we need to keep the delay short so that when I talk, the other person hears it immediately, and therefore they can converse. So we talked about that last week. What we're going to go on with today is looking at some details of how some selected applications work, starting with voice over IP. But first, what can we do today, or what can we do with multimedia applications in the internet? Well, the internet, remember, we use IP for delivering packets across the network. IP is unreliable. Inside IP, there are no retransmissions. You just send an IP datagram via routers. It's best effort. There's no quality of service mechanisms. We just send it and hope it gets there. Our IP packets get no priority over other IP packets. There's no mechanisms for priority in the base IP mechanisms, in the base IP. No guarantee of delivery, no timing guarantees. I send an IP datagram. Again, it will just be delivered to the destination if possible. There's no guarantee it will be delivered in 200 milliseconds, in 2 seconds, or in 2 minutes. It will just make it best effort to deliver. And no priorities, that some packets may go in one direction and other packets to the same destination may take another direction across the internet. There's no guarantee that packets will go in the same route even. When we use TCP, we provide reliability. If I send my IP datagram and it doesn't get to the destination, TCP will recognize that and force a retransmission so that the data does get to the destination. The problem with that is that it adds considerable extra delay. That is, I send the first datagram, I'm waiting for an ACK to come back, I don't receive an ACK, therefore I have to retransmit that original one. So the time from when I sent the first datagram until the datagram is received successfully at the destination could be quite large, this extra delay. That causes a problem for multimedia applications. Another minor thing that we know with TCP, when we start TCP connection with congestion control, we start sending slowly, and then we quickly increase the sending rate until we reach some threshold. That can be a problem sometimes. Because if we start sending slowly, at the start, the throughput is low. So, the internet, when we consider TCP and IP, doesn't have inbuilt mechanisms to support multimedia applications. Multimedia, we would like to give guarantees of delay or performance. We would like to say that if I'm running a video, live video conversation, that we can guarantee the delay of the packets to be less than 200 milliseconds. That would be nice. We don't have such mechanisms built into TCP/IP. We know of some mechanisms that do it. From our previous topic, we looked at quality of service mechanisms, that we could have special algorithms in routers that give priority to packets. They are not inbuilt in the entirety of the internet, or only in some parts. In addition, we could use multicast to make things better, especially if I'm streaming data to many users at once. Yet, without any special mechanisms, we still use multimedia applications today. We still can make voice calls. We can still watch video, live video, over the internet. Let's look at the techniques that allow us to do that. Except sometimes that the quality may not be what we really desire. Try to watch high-definition TV over the internet, and I think you you would struggle. That is, the quality would not be good enough. So we'll look at several applications and see how they work today in terms of providing voice and video over the internet. Starting with voice over IP. Making a voice call using the internet rather than using the old public switch telephone network. I think I'll not go through this whenever I explain this. It adds more confusion to people. Just be aware that there's different terminology. You'll hear about voice over the internet protocol or VoIP, IP telephony, IP phones, voice over the internet. There are some small differences, but I think we can consider them the same. So there may be some confusion sometimes. We'll talk about voice over IP software, like Skype, but Skype also has some protocols for voice over IP, for sending voice over IP. When we talk about voice over IP, often we think about just you and I as normal internet consumers to talk over the general internet. Some companies will have their own IP network for their voice calls. For example, SIT. Our network that connects our two campuses, we can set up our own mechanisms, our own routers, to have voice calls between all the offices using our own internal IP network. Our voice calls don't go out on the outer internet, they're just inside our network. So let's look at how voice over IP works. First, there are several protocols involved when we transfer data and when we set up a voice call. RTP is the real-time transport protocol. You may have seen it in another course. You may have heard about it. It takes the data that we want to send, which is the digitized audio signals, and sends it over an IP network. Voice over IP, I talk into my phone. My phone converts that to bits, converts the analog input to binary data, and RTP takes that binary data and sends it across the internet as special formatted packets. And they are received at the destination, and the destination phone takes them and converts them back into analog output, which is played on the speaker at the destination. So RTP is about transmitting your voice across the network, or video, we'll see later. It uses UDP as a transport protocol. So if we draw a picture of a stack, this is my computer, then here's my Ethernet card. There's a cable coming out. That is, this is really the data link layer and the physical layer. We have IP. And here we have the network layer, and then we have the transport layer, which is either TCP or UDP or several others. RTP uses UDP, and then RTP sits on top of that. And then we have our application, or application layer protocol. So here's my phone. When I talk, my phone software built into the computer. When I talk, it takes my voice, creates bits, using a codec. We've listed some codecs in the previous lecture or the lecture last week. So one of the codecs is used to convert my voice into bits. And that's done by the voice application. So this is the voice application, which then puts those bits into RTP packets. And those RTP packets are sent as UDP packets, eventually IP datagrams sent across the internet. So if we were to draw a packet and the header structure, this packet sent would have an Ethernet header, would have an IP header, UDP, RTP has its header, we'll see the structure of that, and then the data, which is the bits representing my voice. So that's the structure of an RTP packet, example coming out of this computer. We sometimes think of RTP as a transport protocol because it's trying to act like a transport protocol. Even though it's using another transport protocol, UDP is a transport protocol, it's not directly an application layer protocol. So sometimes you'll see people refer that this is in fact the transport layer. It doesn't matter too much whether we treat it as a transport protocol or not, but just be aware that there's another application protocol above it that generates the data. Why do we use UDP? Because TCP is not well designed, or it does not support multimedia data transfer very well. Because of this issue of, with TCP, if we lose some data, we'll retransmit. That introduces extra delay. Delay is not good for multimedia applications. With multimedia applications, if we lose some data, we're okay. It's okay to lose some data because it just, for a short time, reduces the quality at the receiver. So the idea is that use UDP. No retransmissions. We will send our packet. It will go across our network. If this one packet is lost, do not try to retransmit it. Simply send the next packet, which contains the next portion of voice. Keep sending the packets. If we lose one out of 100 packets sent, then we can still play back the voice at the receiver and the person can still understand what was being said. So we use UDP instead of TCP because we don't need retransmissions in most cases, and retransmissions add extra delay. We want to minimize the delay. We just send the packets without any extra retransmission scheme and without any congestion control or flow control that's built into TCP. So what does RTP do? It allows any type of media, it's used for voice calls but also for video, to be transferred across our network. So it supports many different codecs. Remember, the codecs take that analog input and convert them into a format, into a binary format, depending on different algorithms, different compression mechanisms. It adds a sequence number to each block of media that we're sending, and usually also a timestamp. And these, the sequence number and timestamp, help the receiver in playing back the content. Because if we send, so I'm generating some voice, some analog voice over time. We sample the voice and every so often send an RTP packet. So let's say we've sent 10 packets. For the first portion of voice, we send a packet, and then the next portion of voice, we send a second packet, and so on. So we send those 10 RTP packets. At the receiver, we may receive them out of order. A sequence number can help us in determining whether we've received them out of order because they are sent across the internet. There's no guarantee that one packet will arrive in the same order as it is transmitted. If we send 10 packets, it may be that the second packet arrives first. So out of order, sequence number can help us at the receiver to determine that that's happened and to do something about it. And the timestamp's also useful. Again, when we spoke about the impact of jitter, knowing when to play back this data is useful, to know that this second packet needs to be played back at this time, the third packet at this time, so that we generate the output at the receiver that is the same as the input at the sender. So we include a sequence number and timestamp. It doesn't provide any guarantees of reliability. Like we said, there's no retransmissions. Send 10 packets. If one of them is lost, too bad. We will not try to fix that. There's no guarantee of timeliness. Send 10 packets. If they take 200 milliseconds to get there, that's okay. If they take 2 seconds to get there, that's okay. From RTP's perspective, at least. RTP will not guarantee how long it takes to get to their destination. It cannot. And there's no priority mechanisms. There's no, in RTP, there's no mechanism to say that this packet should be delivered faster than some other packet. Those mechanisms, the last two, timeliness and priority, and require quality of service mechanisms, things we covered in a previous topic. This is the structure of the packet format, that is, the details of this part. So there are different fields here. For example, the version, the total or the minimum size of the header, RTP header, is 12 bytes. How big is an IP header? Can anyone remember? I think it's 20 bytes normally. UDP, from memory, is 8 bytes. Ignore Ethernet, because in the Internet, the only things that are constant... Coming out of my computer, there's an Ethernet header, but the next router, it may be a different header. But if we just focus on these parts, and then we have some data, let's say X bytes. So we have an IP header, a UDP header, RTP header. We'd like to keep those headers small, because the larger they are relative to the data, the less efficient we are. So far we have 28, 30, 40 bytes in total of this part, plus our X bytes of data. If X was small, if every RTP packet had just 40 bytes of data, then our efficiency would be at 50%. Because we'd have 40 bytes of header plus 40 bytes of data. So we care about the size of the header, especially the total size, because we'd like to keep it small relative to the size of the data. That's normal with any protocol. But it becomes especially important with multimedia applications where we want transfer to be fast. We don't want to waste time transmitting header. We'd like to spend all our time transmitting data because we need good performance for our multimedia applications. We'll see later through an example that there are methods to compress these headers to make them even smaller. And we'll give some examples of the data size a little bit later. Now, so we have 12 bytes. There's some optional information if we have some extensions. So it can be larger than 12 bytes, but that's optional. Some of these fields, they're described on the next slide. Ones that I can remember immediately are at version. We have a timestamp, a 32-bit timestamp included, a sequence number. The payload type indicates the codec used for this data. Is it MPEG-4? Is it some motion JPEG? Is it some G711 voice codec? So the payload type is some number that indicates the type of data inside here. Synchronization source identifier, we'll see later that we can have data that is mixed from multiple sources and sent together. So if we're having a group voice call, that there's many people talking, so more than just two, then there are multiple sources. So what RTP can do is to mix the data from each source together and join it into a single packet. And therefore we have some identifier of the source. We'll see that when we look at mixing. What are the other fields? Sequence number. If we have optional fields, we set the X bit to 1. P bit is set if there's no padding. What else is it? Payload type. Some examples. If the number is 0, it means we're using the very basic voice codec, PCM, 8 kHz, 64 kilobits per second. Number 3, a GSM codec. Number 26, motion JPEG. So there are others as well. These are some examples. Timestamp. Some identifier of the source. And because we can have mixing from multiple sources, if there are 5 people talking at the same time, or talking in a voice conversation, then the data from each of those could be mixed together into one packet. And therefore, we have a unique ID of the source, and we have some count of the number of sources that are contributing to this stream of data. Maybe they'll mix that up. There's a separate ID, a contributing source ID, for which source is contributing. Let's see that when we look at mixing. So, 2 additional mechanisms in RTP. Translation. What we can do is have a special device that converts the codec formats. We have the source computer using RTP, and it's using a PCM codec for voice, which is the number 0 in terms of the payload type in RTP. So this is generating, it's taking someone's voice using the PCM codec and creating RTP packets and sending those RTP packets across the network. That is, as we're talking, it's generating packets. Here's the first packet, the second packet, the nth packet, and so on. It keeps generating packets as we talk. And those packets contain data encoded with a PCM voice codec. We can have an intermediate device that receives those packets and translates the content to a different codec. Not translating the language, translating the codec. We're using PCM codec here. We output, we take the same data and change it to use a different codec. One of the GSM codecs, for example. And then send that on to the eventual destination. So RTP allows this type of feature of changing the codec used of the data through the network. Why do we want such a feature? Well, maybe my source only supports this codec I'm talking. Maybe this is a wireless network. So this is me on my office computer, and this is a gateway to a wireless network. So this gateway recognizes, okay, I've got a wireless network here. I need to use much less bandwidth. PCM uses 64 kilobits per second. GSM, let's say around 14 kilobits per second. That's good for sending across a wireless link because it uses less resource. So what we do, this source doesn't know that the destination is on a wireless link. It just knows the address of the destination. It generates using PCM at 64 kilobits per second. This special device translates that by changing the codec so that we use a much lower data rate to send, consuming less of the resources of our wireless link in this case. And this one receives the GSM encoded data and plays back at the destination. So we can translate at intermediate points in the network. Another feature that RTP supports is called mixing. Here's an example where we have a group voice call or video call. Here's a set of sources, that is four people, and here's one of the destinations. That is, we have five people communicating. Four of them are in one office or in one building, one location, and the fifth one is somewhere else on the other side of the world. This is our internet. So what we can do is mix the data from these four sources and send it as a single RTP stream. The normal operation would be that when the person at this computer talks, they generate RTP packets and send them across the internet. When this one, and that is happening all the time, that is this one sending RTP packets. When there's sound coming out here, we'll have data to be sent. And similar with this one and each of these four. So the packets from each of the four sources would be all sent across to destination one. Mixing involves having a special device here, a mixer, which combines the data from those four sources and sends it as one stream of RTP packets to the destination. So they generate their normal packets based on those four sources. As audio is generated at each of those, they're sent to the mixer. The mixer combines them. So as it receives data from the four sources, it just sends one stream of RTP packets output containing the audio from all four sources, which normally works because normally there's just one person talking time. Even though there are four sources there, if there were two people talking at the time, then the mixer would just combine the audio together and the receiver would receive a combination of what they've generated. So if they're creating audio, if they're all talking at the same time, the mixer takes that audio and joins it together and sends it in one stream of RTP packets to the destination. And the destination hears or receives and hears the same as if the mixer wasn't there, they sent their packets separately. This can lead to efficiencies in the use of the network because we send less packets across the network here. With the mixer, we're sending one packet which is representing the audio from the four sources. Without the mixer, we'd be sending four packets, one representing the audio from each of the sources. So we're saving on what's sent across the internet. So that's mixing in RTP. And that's why we have these different fields like the contributing source ID. It keeps track of, as we receive the packets, who actually generated that data, who was the source that contributed to that audio. So they are two features that are supported in RTP, which are useful for many multimedia applications. Translating the content, that is changing the codec used, and mixing, which is combining content into one stream. Any questions on either of those two before we move on? All clear? Sorry? Gateway. Okay, what have I shown over here? So, this is me on my office computer making a voice call. I just know the address of the destination I call. We'll see it's more about addressing later, but I know the address of the destination, so I make a voice call. I use my normal codec, which is the PCM codec. It encodes and sends data at 64 kilobits per second. Because I think that's good quality, I want a good quality voice call. Normally, that would be sent to the destination would decode and receive, fine. But in some cases, we'd like to change the codec used. Here's an example. The destination is a mobile device. They are on a wireless network. This is a gateway to that wireless network, which means it's like the access point or a base station. If I draw the network, here's my source. This is just any network, the internet. This is a gateway, and this is a single wireless link to our destination. By gateway, I mean it's the gateway from the wired network to this single wireless network. This gateway receives and recognizes that, okay, this person is sending using PCM codec at 64 kilobits per second. We have a very slow wireless link here, very low data rate wireless link. Sending high quality audio at 64 kilobits per second is going to be a waste of our resources. Therefore, we will translate that and convert it to a lower quality audio codec, GSM codec, which sends at 14 kilobits per second. So the gateway performs translation in RTP terminology. So it reduces the quality of the audio and sends less bits per second across the wireless link. So this one receives, can still play back the audio, but of course at a lower quality from what the source originated with. So the gateway is just a special device in the network in this case that performs translation of the codec. This is just one example where it's used. It could be used in other cases. That is, if we know the gateway to the SIT network, say a router, it knows all the computers in SIT only support one codec for listening to voice. So when it receives RTP packets coming in, it can translate them to that one codec. So if SIT's network only supports codec, I can't remember one of the names, G, was it 722? One of the voice codecs, if it only supports this codec, then even if someone makes a call with a different codec, it comes to the SIT gateway or router, which does the translation from the codec that was transmitted to the codec that SIT computers support, and then forwards it onto my office computer with the correct format. So just two examples of where translation is needed. And translation normally occurs at a special device in the network. In this case, I've called it a gateway. Okay. Any other questions? What codec are you using to listen to audio? What format of audio are you using on your headphones? MP3. So that's an example of a codec. Also includes compression, remember. Any problems? No? Yes, translating the code, the format, really. Not the content, the format of that content. Mixing. Mixing is combining content from multiple sources and sending it in one stream of RTP packets. So it's like mixing audio of from four different sources. Four people are talking, generating audio. The mixer combines that into one stream of audio that goes out, which is just the addition of those four. What happens when four people talk at the same time? So there are four sources generating audio. When they come to me, the receiver, if they generate them separately or if they are combined into one audio stream, I receive the same thing. I just hear the four people talking. That is, the content is combined in the channel anyway. So let's see what happens. Let's see if we can draw on the time scale. Let's make some more space. Remember that what RTP is doing from a single source, RTP is taking the input, say the audio input, and sending RTP packets that represent that audio. So we have the input of source one, some audio over time, and source two, source three, this is the analog input. Over time, if we look at the four sources, this is representing the analog input. Maybe source one is talking over this period of time. Source one is quiet and then talking and then quiet. And at the same time, source three is quiet, not saying anything, and then generates some audio, and similar source four generates. Okay, so there's four people. There are four people at the same time. Sometimes they're talking, sometimes they are not all talking. And that's typical. That is normally in a group call, then usually it's just one person talking. Coming from the others, maybe some background noise. So there's always some noise, maybe from the air conditioner. So you may not be talking, but there may be noise captured on your microphone. So there may be some small signal here. What RTP does is takes this audio input and generates packets. So it uses a codec to generate bits, some sequence of bits for each of these, if we consider them separately, and in an RTP packet. So if this was for a period of 4 seconds, just as an example, let's say we created four packets, each containing 1 second worth of voice. That is, I'm talking, the first 1 second of voice, RTP creates one packet, sends. The next 1 second of voice, it creates a packet and sends, and so on. So it's just sending packets on a regular basis. So this one normally would send four packets. Packet 1, 2, 3, 4, out across to the destination. The first packet would contain the first second of audio from source 1, the fourth packet, the last second of audio. And similar, this one would send four packets. So let's call this one S1, packet 1, S1, and we could draw that the same for each. So without mixing, each source generates packets and sends them to the destination. This is from source 3, the fourth packet from source 3. Where the first packet would contain this period of very small analog. Quiet. No noise. So that without mixing, those packets would be sent to the destination. The destination, let's say the destination receives the first set of packets, which really means the first 1 second of voice from S1, the first 1 second of voice from S2, from S3, and S4. The destination receives them, looks at the timestamps of them, and plays them back at the destination. What do we hear? Well, the destination hears, if we play back these at the same time, the destination hears the addition of these four. That is, all right, here we have nothing. If we look at the first, if we break this into four blocks, in the first 1 second, these two people were talking. These two were not. What do we hear when there's two people talking? Well, it's just those two signals added together. And we hear the combination of those two. If two people talk at the same time, I will hear both of their voices. If only one person is talking, I'll hear their voice. If all four, then I'll hear all of them. So, what we do is that we send this from the sources, that's here, but then this special device, the mixer, receives them. It knows that those four sources are all sending to the one destination. So what it does, it takes these first four packets, the first 1 second from source 1, 2, 3, and 4, and mixes them together. Simply takes the audio and generates one audio signal as output, which is the addition of these three. Because that's all we do when we have multiple people talking together. The audio adds together. And I will not draw it here. What we would do is we'd combine the audio together and put it into one RTP packet, which goes to the destination. So instead of sending four separate RTP packets to the destination, the mixer sends just one RTP packet representing the first 1 second of audio from all four people. And then so on for subsequent seconds. So remember that audio, if we think of the signals coming from these first four people, then if one's talking, the other three aren't, then what I receive is just the audio from the first person. If two people are talking at the same time, then what I receive is the addition of their two signals. So we just add them together. And that's what we can do here. Of course, if two people are talking at the same time, it may make it harder for me to understand that audio. But that's no different whether we send four packets or we combine the signal together, what would it look like? Draw, but add these four together and you'll get the signal. And that's what the mixer does, essentially. Combines the four signals, sends them in one packet. It can be more complex than that. That is, the mixer could be smarter in how it combines them, but that's the basic concept. How do we change the payload in the middle of the session? You mean with the translator? Here we're just sending RTP packets. The translator receives a packet. The packet contains the data, the audio. It decodes using the PCM codec, gets the original data, and then encodes using the new codec. And it has to do that quickly because then it sends it on to the next, to the destination. So we just decode and then encode. Let's look at an example, do an example calculation before we look. All right, we'll say something about RTP control protocol and then give an example for RTP. So RTP is for transferring the data, the audio, and it can also be used for video and even other things. So that carries the actual content that we want to send from source to destination. RTCP, it's not TCP, it's RTP control protocol, is for exchanging information about the sender and receiver, about the quality of the communications. For example, there are special reports. So we have our source and destination. They can send special messages to each other to say, exchange about the quality of the communications and perhaps ask the other to change codec. So a sender report, the sender periodically sends a report to the receiver saying things to help synchronize the streams. The receiver, so the receiver's receiving the audio, for example, can send a report that says things about, that gives the information about improving the quality of what the sender is sending. So if I'm a receiver, I may tell the sender, okay, my buffer size is this, and the sender may use that information to decide, okay, let's change the codec. Let's increase the codec from a GSM low-quality codec up to a high-quality PCM codec because I recognize the receiver has a better connection now. The receiver can cope with more. And there's some other types of messages. Just for communicating between the sender and receiver, not the actual data, but about how the data transfer is occurring. Things like describing who owns the stream, who's the actual person generating the content. If to finish the transfer of data, we can send a goodbye message. If you want to transfer, in addition to the audio, subtitles, captions, closed captioning, then there are some special message formats for that. So that's RTCP. Let's give an example for RTP. And the example comes from an exam last year. You may not be able to read it all. I'll explain and give the main concepts. We have a scenario where we're using voice over IP for calls between our two campuses in SIT. We have a link between the two campuses, so let's draw this as we go. So our two campuses, we just have a single link, which is 2 megabit per second, bidirectional, that is full duplex. We can send at 2 megabits per second in this direction, and at the same time send 2 megabits per second in the opposite direction. The LANs, that is inside each campus, are 1 gigabit per second, which means that this link, and it's a WiMAX link, is the bottleneck. That's going to limit the performance. if, so this is a router here, in fact, and this is my computer, the link from my computer to the router is 1 gigabit per second. And similar for the destination or the computer, oh, sorry, wrong campus, here. So the limit, or what we call the bottleneck link, is this one. So we can ignore the impacts of the other ones. We'll see for this question. And we're using voice over IP for our phone calls between the two campuses. And we're just focusing on calls between the campuses, not inside a campus. What have we got? We're using the codec G726. We'll explain some more about that in a moment. G726 is the name of a particular codec for encoding voice. So if I'm using my computer to make my voice call, then my computer, when I talk into the microphone, there's an application that implements G726, which takes my analog input, converts it to bits according to this codec, does compression if necessary, so it does the sampling and generates binary data. Then my computer uses RTP to send that data to the destination. And the destination computer receives it with RTP and also has the G726 codec, which takes the received bits and generates the analog output on the speaker at the receiver. There's some assumptions here. The question is, what is the maximum number of voice calls that can be supported between the two campuses? That is, we have many people here who want to talk to many people here. How many people can talk at the same time, given that we have a 2 megabit per second link? How many voice calls can we support at the same time? For that to answer the question, we need to know a little bit more about G726. And it's given here. Or the useful information. This codec takes a sample size of 20 bytes. So every sample, remember what we do is we take the analog input, the codec takes a sample and gets a binary value. Every sample is 20 bytes in length. And we sample at a regular interval. And with G726, we sample every 5 milliseconds. So we have 200 samples per second. Every sample is 20 bytes. Now, RTP does not necessarily send one sample per packet. What RTP may do is take multiple samples and put them in one packet. Let's try and illustrate that. Here's my source computer again. My Ethernet LAN card, which has the data link layer and the physical layer, IP, RTP runs on top of UDP. This is our protocol stack. And on the top is our application. If you can't see that, then here we have an application, RTP, UDP, IP, Ethernet. Same as I drew at the start of the lecture on the other diagram. The application is my voice over IP software, which includes the G726 codec. So what comes in to this application is some analog audio. The codec produces bits coming out. Those bits, that sequence of bits, are sent to RTP. What RTP does is takes them and puts them into an RTP packet and eventually sends them. What we're saying is that the G726 codec, every sample is 20 bytes in length or 160 bits. One sample is 20 bytes. There's a sampling interval of 5 milliseconds. So every 5 milliseconds, take a sample, get 20 bytes, 160 bits. 5 milliseconds later, take another sample, 160 bits, and so on. So one sample contains 20 bytes. In 1 second, we're going to have 200 samples. Just record some data. That's just 1 second divided by 5 milliseconds is 200. What RTP does with this G726 codec is creates one RTP packet when it has 80 bytes of data. So if we draw our RTP packet, here's the header of our RTP packet. This is the data. Or the payload. How much voice is inside each RTP packet? 80 bytes of voice. 1 bytes, so we could think every RTP packet contains 4 samples. We are continuously sampling the analog input, generating bits, 160 bits every 5 milliseconds, and when we have 80 bytes, we send an RTP packet. When we have another 80 bytes, we send an RTP packet. So this RTP packet contains 80 bytes. It contains a header. In the exam, we gave the size of the header, I think, somewhere else. And we gave an example before, it was 20 bytes, 12 bytes. RTP header is 12 bytes without any options. We're also going to include the size of the other headers, UDP. UDP is 8 bytes and IP 20 bytes. Did we say Ethernet? I think. Okay, and we also have an Ethernet header. Even though we're using WiMAX, from here to here we're using Ethernet, so we have an Ethernet header. From memory, that's 14 bytes. When we send across this link, it is the same, except instead of the Ethernet header, we have a WiMAX header. But let's assume they are the same. At least the same size. So, my computer, which is shown here, generates a packet that looks like this. It contains voice, 4 samples of voice. Each sample is 20 bytes. We have 80 bytes of voice per packet. Have an RTP header of 12 bytes, a UDP header of 8 bytes, IP 20, Ethernet 14. Send that. Goes across here, goes across my WiMAX link to the other campus and eventually received to the destination. And as I keep talking, generating voice, it keeps sending RTP packets. How many packets is it sending per second? That's what we need to know. Try and calculate that. How many packets, RTP packets, are being sent per second? Think about, if we know that, then we're very close to that answer. How many packets per second do we need to send in this case? Who wants to have an attempt? What's an answer? 50, good. 50 packets per second. I'll just note that here. PPS, packets per second. Why? Well, we look what we have here and look at what we know about our sampling rate. We know that with our codec we're sampling 1 per 5 milliseconds. Every 5 milliseconds, take one sample. But what we do with RTP is when we have, and each sample was 20 bytes. But with RTP, when we have 80 bytes, that is when we have 4 samples, we create a packet and send. When we have another 4 samples, we create a packet and send. So there's two ways to look at this. Every 4 samples, we get one RTP packet to be sent. One sample in 5 milliseconds, 4 samples would be 20 milliseconds. Every 20 milliseconds, we'll have one RTP packet to send. And therefore, in 1 second, in 20 milliseconds, one RTP packet, in 1 second, we'd get 50 RTP packets. 4 samples produces one RTP packet, or every 20 milliseconds we produce one RTP packet. In 1 second, we can do that 50 times. Gives us 50 RTP packets per second. The other way to look at it, we said also that we get in 1 second 200 samples per second. We know that every packet contains 4 samples. If we have 200 samples per second, one packet is 4 samples, that means 50 packets per second, 200 divided by 4. The same value, just a different way to view that. So, with this voice codec and this way that we encapsulate the samples into the RTP packet, we're generating 50 RTP packets per second. How big is each packet? How many bytes? Add up these values, what do you get? 40, 120, 134 bytes. 134 bytes per packet. 50 packets per second are being sent. Multiply them together. Times by 50 packets per second. I will convert to bits, because I'll multiply by 8 as well. 53.6 kilobits per second. Or 53,600 bits per second is being sent. 53.6 kilobits per second. So using this codec and this encapsulation scheme, my computer for one voice call is sending 53.6 kilobits per second. The question was, how many voice calls could we support? Well, we can support 2 million bits per second. One voice call requires 53,600, so we can easily determine the total number. We allow 2 million bits per second divided by our one voice call is 53,600. 37 voice calls. So that would be our answer. That is, in this network, using this encoding scheme, if we ignore any other factors, there may be other overheads and other traffic, but if we ignore that, then our 2 megabit per second WiMAX link can allow us to make 37 voice calls at the same time. So 37 people at this campus could be calling and talking to 37 people at the other campus at the same time. When the 38th person picks up their phone or presses dial, the network has two options. Reject that call, do not let them make the call, so give a busy dial tone or a special dial tone. Or, if we try to make the call, then some packets are going to be lost. So if we start the 38th call, we'll be sending into this link at greater than 2 megabits per second. Slightly greater. So some of the bits are going to be lost. They're not going to get to the other side. Or they'll be at least queued up and have to wait. There'll be an extra delay that we increase and eventually leading to packet loss. So if we have the 38th and more calls, then two options. Reject the 38th call so that we only ever have 37 calls at once, or allow the 38th call, but that will lead to packet drops and packet delays and lowers the quality for everyone. The 38 callers, the quality of the receiver would go down because they're not receiving all of the bits they expect to receive and cannot play back the audio correctly. And that's what happens when you use voice over IP in the internet. In busy times, you make a voice call and the quality at the receiver will go down because many other people are making a voice call and the resources are consumed or not enough to support high quality. That's run out of time for this morning. We'll continue looking at some aspects of voice over IP, how to set up a call, and then IPTV, how to send TV, video, over the internet in the afternoon. If you have any questions, come and see me now, or I can address them in the afternoon. I may also say a little bit about the assignment in the afternoon as well. So let's continue at 2:40.